All right. Hello and welcome to the Starting and Operating a Successful Permaculture Nursery Summit brought to you by the Permaculture Institute of North America, or PINA. If you support permaculture across the North American continent, then please consider becoming a PINA member today at pina.in. And today's summit is brought to you by PINA members and for PINA members. So thank you all. I'm Jesse, and I will be the host for today's summit. Our next presenter is the fabulous Michalina Hunter, presenting on the topic of growing perennial vegetables for seed. Michalina's love of for seeds began in childhood, saving scarlet runner beans with her mother on the Sunshine Coast, a passion that led her to start her own seed company in 2021 after working with Dragonfly Seeds. Frustrated by the lack of perennial vegetable seeds for home gardeners, she dedicated herself to sourcing and sharing these resilient, climate-friendly crops across Canada and beyond. On her Vancouver Island farm, Cicada Seeds, she grows high-quality, open-pollinated seeds without pesticides, synthetic fertilizers, or GMOs, ensuring gardeners can cultivate food with integrity. Committed to food and social justice, Michalina supports Indigenous seed and food projects, envisions a future where perennial vegetables are a staple in every garden, transforming how we grow, eat, and regenerate the land. Welcome, Michalina.
Thanks so much for having me, Jesse.
Yeah, it's absolutely our pleasure. I'm super looking forward to your presentation, and perennial vegetables has been a big fascination of mine since I think Eric Tonesmeyer's book landed in my library at some point. So I'm really looking forward to this. But first, I'm going to ask you the same two questions I've been asking everybody, just because the answers are so interesting. So the first one is, what impact has permaculture had on your life and your livelihood? I know it's a big question, but what do you think?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I think it's had really big impacts for me. My mom was into permaculture when I was growing up and had a few things like sorrel and Egyptian onions and perennials and was using a lot of permaculture principles to manage our hobby farm. And that was kind of how I got my start into farming and seed saving and having an emphasis on ecology and how everything is connected, and emphasis on earth care, people care, fair share, those kind of things. I think the foundations of permaculture are really awesome, and it's led me on a path that has been really meaningful to me. And I think we just need so much more of it in our world right now and always.
Yes, increasingly so, it seems. So thank you for that. That's awesome that your mother kind of had that as you were growing up. That's something that maybe I can instill in my children too. And so the next question is kind of similar, but more particular to the nursery business. Why is the nursery business like such a good fit for you, and why might it be such a good fit for somebody else?
Well, I love hanging out with plants and being outside. And then it's also to have it's a nice balance with kind of like the indoor admin stuff you can do on rainy days or if it's too hot out or something. I wanted to have some kind of farming job. But I really didn't want to go to a farmer's market every weekend. I just wanted to have like free weekends and a bit more flexibility. And so selling seeds and a few plants means I can sell online pretty easily. I've got like a farm stand occasionally, and there's just so much more flexibility on how you sell things, when you sell things, less of a shelf life than like fresh veggies. So yeah, it fits my lifestyle a lot better.
Yep, that totally makes sense. Well, without further ado, then, why don't you jump on into your presentation, Growing Perennial Vegetables for Seed? I'll be in the background if you need me. Otherwise, take it away.
Awesome. Yay. Okay. I will share my screen and get that all set up.
Looks good.
So, okay. Awesome. To present, make sure all my windows are in the right place. Okay. Awesome. Well, yeah. Thank you for coming to my talk today. My name is Michalina Hunter, or Mickey for short, like Mickey Mouse is good too. And I specialize in selling rare perennial vegetable seeds through Cicada Seeds. There's a few of my favorite perennial vegetables on the screen here. Good King Henry, very drought tolerant, kind of a spinach substitute. The Homesteader's Kaleidoscopic Perennial Kale Grex in the middle turns these crazy colors in the winter sometimes. And perennial nine-star broccoli, which think needs a little bit of breeding work, but is one of my favorite perennials. It's very cool. This presentation won't be focused too much on the individual plants, so I thought I would just put a teaser there. So I'm going to talk about my farm and business context and a bit of the infrastructure I have. And then I'll just go over briefly how to produce quality seed, like how to source quality stock to start with, cross-pollination, population sizes, and selection. And then I'll talk about seed harvesting, threshing, and cleaning, germination testing to make sure the seeds you've grown are good and viable, seed storage and packing, and a tiny bit about customer service and sales. It's a big topic, but I think it's good to talk about. And then some resources like my favorite books and websites and people to follow. So a little bit about me. As Jesse mentioned, I've been gardening and saving seeds with my mom since I was a kid. She had the seed company called Dragonfly Seeds, and she still does. And I wanted to keep with a bug theme for my seed company later, so I chose cicada seeds. I really, really love insects. I just find them so interesting, and they're such an important part of our ecosystems. So I want to highlight them. I started a seed library in Squamish, which is near Vancouver, British Columbia, in 2017. I was working with a really cool nonprofit at the time after university called the Squamish Climate Action Network. And I was managing a school garden, and we started a food policy council and just got really into food and agriculture, and dove into seeds. So I was teaching people how to save vegetable seeds in their own gardens and how they could check out seeds from the library and then save them and return them. So I had to do a lot of research to make sure I knew how to teach people how to save seeds properly. So that's when I got really nerdy into the technical side of seed saving. And I started dabbling in perennial vegetables about 8 years ago, but I had a hard time sourcing seeds to grow this stuff or finding plants or any nursery that carried these kind of things. I was reading a lot of permaculture books and just getting super into design, and had such a hard time finding these plants. I got a few seed packets to start from Aster Lane Edibles in Ottawa, which was a really cool seed company run by Telsing Andrews, but it's not running anymore. But I am just so grateful to her for the start in this this part of my life. So then we moved from Squamish to Vancouver Island, and we didn't have to move every few years because we were renting at the time in Squamish. So put in a big garden, and then I started selling seeds through Cicada Seeds in 2021. Oh, and that was a photo of me with Delft Perpetual Leek in blossom, just starting to set seeds. I love that plant. So I'm located on Vancouver Island, BC, Canada, west coast of Canada, where that star is. We have cool, wet winters and warm summers. They get up to, recently, sometimes we get heat waves over 30 degrees Celsius, which is, I think, over 90-ish Fahrenheit. And we do have about a 3 month drought in the summer, usually. Approximately zone 7, and the coldest winter temperature we get is around minus 15 or 5 degrees Fahrenheit. And this kind of stuff is important for growing perennials, so you know it will survive your winters. And I want to acknowledge that I'm on the unceded land of the Comox, Qualicum, and Tsleil-Waututh peoples, with unceded meaning the land was not given up by the people who were already living here when early colonists came. And in the context of permaculture and building land-based businesses, I think it's important to acknowledge that the land that many of us are farming on is stolen, and I'm able to do what I'm doing now because of the genocide that happened in the past and ongoing racism. And I mean, I don't bring this up to make people feel bad, but To pose the question as to how we can use permaculture to heal this harm that's happened. And the indigenous peoples where I live here had, and well, and everywhere had complex permaculture systems, such as the one pictured here. This is Camas Meadow in so-called Victoria, the capital of the province here. And those are some gorgeous Garry oak trees in the background. And these meadows were carefully fertilized and managed with fire to keep the shrubs from taking over. And they were incredibly productive. I've heard the bulbs, so camas is a native flower that makes bulbs. And some of the bulbs would be as big as your fist or bigger. And most people don't, yeah, it's hard to find any bulbs that are that big anymore. But there's still remnants of these meadows all over the island, and some folks doing some incredible stewardship work still. So yeah, I just think we have so much to learn about land stewardship from Indigenous folks, and I believe we need to center their voices to be able to heal the earth and all the human and non-human relatives that live here. So I put out the question to anyone watching to ask yourself how you can leverage your farm or nursery business to benefit equity deserving groups where you live and elsewhere in the world. Like, can you redistribute the wealth by donating or allow access to your land? Or can you donate plants or seeds or volunteer for food justice projects? And I'm sure many of you are doing this already because permaculture folks are so generous, but I think it's worth thinking about and adding to your business plan or your guiding vision early on in your nursery journey. So, a bit more about the farm. There's about an eighth of an acre in intensive cultivation, so you don't need to have a lot of space to get started. I will be leasing a quarter acre down the road nearby this season, a site that has more water and deer fencing and stuff like that. I currently have no-till 30-inch beds, but that was before I knew I was growing a bunch of going to grow a bunch of perennials that get really tall and unruly. So I'll be redesigning the beds to make them wider. The garden is currently on drip irrigation, and I grow about 50 seed crops, and just over half are perennials currently. I also have an unheated greenhouse that my partner built. It's about 20 by 40 feet, and I mostly grow, well, maybe like half seed crops and half food crops and stuff like tomatoes and cucumbers that I don't usually save seeds from. And a greenhouse can be useful for a collection or drying area for seed if you don't have other covered space, but it's absolutely not essential. It is nice though. For indoor infrastructure, this photo is going to look kind of like janky, I'm sure. But I'm mostly just operating out of a spare room we have in our house. It's got a couple desks, a lot of shelves, lots of Rubbermaid bins kicking around. And this is my order packing space, which I'm sitting at right now. It's got some permaculture books to raise up my laptop. And I have all my seeds organized on each side for easy picking to put into envelopes. It is not fancy. I take over the kitchen table for packing seeds, which, yeah, has its pros and cons. But yeah, you do not need a fancy setup or a lot of room to get started. So, deciding what to grow in your nursery or your seed nursery. So, what do you like to eat? Because you'll probably be growing a lot of it, and it's helpful if you actually like to eat or use the plants you grow. And what can you specialize in? Like, what limitations of your property could be advantageous for vetting the plants that you're going to grow? So, do you have like water limitations, or is it shady, or the soil's really wet? There's that permaculture saying that problem is the solution. How can you lean into that? You'll have a much easier time growing if you're not forcing plants to grow where they don't want to. And it's kind of a cool marketing opportunity too. So the same goes for how you want to manage things. Maybe you don't want to bend over to harvest things, or you have mobility limitations. So you only grow plants that, grow over 3 feet tall to harvest seed, or you only grow in raised beds. There are definitely people out there with the same needs and desires. So I think it's worth tailoring things to make it work for you. And is there a demand for these plants? I am all about growing the weird and wacky and wonderful stuff, but I have found that those are usually not the best sellers. I'd say dabble in the more uncommon stuff for sure, but the more mainstream kind of permaculture plants will be your most successful probably. So I'd make those your bread and butter. And if you are planning on mailing plants or seeds versus just doing local sales, you'll be able to reach a much broader market than if you're just selling locally, which can help move along the more unique stuff. This is Korean celery, one of my favorite cold hardy perennial vegetables. You can like dig under the snow and eat the leaves still. Yeah, it's amazing. So, why would you want to sell seed versus plants or probably like tubers or something like that? So, seed does require some extra technical knowledge to produce, but they have a long shelf life, often several years. It's cheap and easy to ship them and transport them. They don't take up much storage space. I have most of my seeds just in a couple Rubbermaid bins. And you can sell seeds year round. So all of that stuff just really, really appealed to me. This is skirret, one of my favorite perennial root vegetables. It's very tasty. I've been eating a lot of it this winter. So sourcing seeds. If you want to produce quality seed, start with quality seed at the beginning. So source from reputable sellers or farms if you can. So we want to avoid diseased, inbred, or crossed up seeds or plants. And watch out for misidentification of varieties or species. It's relatively common with lesser known plants. I know earth chestnut is one that's like there's like three or four different species that all get confused in the nursery trade. And trades can be a great way to get some interesting stuff. I've done trades with folks all over the world, and it's been so fun. It's also great to nerd out with other plant geeks. And sometimes you can find some interesting stuff on Etsy, but it's really hit or miss as to the quality, it seems like, for seeds. But sometimes if there's something really special on there, you just can't resist. And I would suggest if you're going to grow something new, doing a smaller trial to start with. Just so you make sure you know that that plant can produce seeds in your climate. It is helpful for a lot of varieties to have like dry late summers to let the seeds mature, but there are things that ripen seeds like much earlier in the season or more resistant to moisture and rain later on. So you just kind of got to play around and see what works for you. So another concept to know about is crossing. So plants that are in the same species can cross with each other if they're flowering at the same time and they're close enough together. So for example, broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, some kales, and more are all the same species and they can cross with each other if they're flowering within about 800 feet of each other. So each species will have a different isolation distance, depending on how the flowers are pollinated. So whether they primarily self-pollinate or cross-pollinate, and whether the pollen is carried by bees or wind, will determine how far away you need to isolate, different plants, different varieties of the same species from each other. And another concept is minimum population sizes. So different species require different minimum populations to remain healthy and avoid inbreeding depression, which basically can just cause a lack of vigor, making the plants kind of sickly looking, or they don't grow as large, or they're more susceptible to disease. And culling or roguing out plants with undesired traits is essential for the maintenance of these plants. So you'll often need to plant more plants than you think you'll need, since some of them will be lost to roguing, and you'll still need to meet that minimum population size. So these are just a few concepts of seed saving that I encourage anyone to familiarize themselves with. There's mostly info out there for like regular garden vegetables and producing seeds of those. And there's lots of great books and resources that I'll mention on the end. So permaculture plants aren't necessarily listed in these resources, but you can kind of get a general idea of what plants in the same family might need and kind of make your best guess. And then over time, you could kind of observe these plants and see like, oh, are they losing vigor over time? Should I bring in some more seed, more genetics from somewhere else to kind of boost the vigor of the population? Or yeah, kind of a bit of trial and error. So eventually the time will come where you're ready to harvest seed. And I like to let the seed mature on the plant for as long as possible before they either fall on the ground or birds start eating them. And you kind of gotta just monitor them, observe them, and make that call onto when to cut them and bring them inside. If the seeds are close to ripening, sometimes the pods get kind of like a leathery texture, which indicates they're getting close. But if rain or frost threatens, you can pull out the entire plant with the roots or cut them low, close to the ground, and bring the whole plant or seed stalks under cover to mature all the way. They will suck up a lot of energy from the stems and any remaining leaves. So you can get a lot of after ripening on seeds if you need to. I bring the seed stalks into my greenhouse or my house if they're smaller amounts to dry down fully. And dry seeds are much easier to thresh to get the seeds out of the pods than slightly less dry seed. And I'll collect these seeds on screens. You can lay them out on screens in the greenhouse or in big paper bags. Or I use a lot of old bed sheets. I use them all the time in the greenhouse. I'll use them sometimes for shade if I'm like transplanting or shade in the greenhouse. And then later in the fall, you can use them, just chuck all your kale seed stalks on there, kind of bundle them up. And sheets are great because they're like cotton sheets, they're still breathable. And I find that sometimes tarps can hold too much moisture in the seed stalks. So use what you have, keep an eye on things, and of course it'll depend on what your climate is like in the fall when seeds are ready. This is perennial kale, that homesteader's kaleidoscopic kale. And I am 6 feet tall, and you can see this kale is like at least 8 feet tall in some places. It just gets huge. It's so fun to grow. And yeah, another thing I didn't add to this presentation, but definitely worth mentioning, is you will probably need a lot of stakes of some kind, like whether they're T-posts or strong bamboo and baling twine. Definitely try to be proactive on staking up your seed crops because they can get really tall and you don't want them flopping over because they can kind of get wet and rot on the ground. So yeah, definitely invest in your choice of stake material. Okay, so after you brought your seeds in and they're dry, you can go on to threshing, in essence, getting seeds out of their pods. For large amounts, it's awesome to just stomp on them with a sh over a sheet or a tarp. For smaller amounts, you can whack the seed stalks against the side of a bucket or a garbage can. You can also crush the seed pods or strip them off the stems by hand. Gloves are often helpful. And those are all amazing methods to get started. I primarily use those. There's also some awesome DIY threshers out there. Propaganda by the Seed has an awesome bucket thresher tutorial on YouTube. And then there are threshing machines that you could get for medium to large scale growers. And for cleaning, you can operate a decent sized seed business just with the stuff in this photo. So there's a mix of kitchen sieves and colanders, just stuff you would find at the thrift store. And once your seed is threshed, but it's still got a bunch of chaff, that dry plant material, you want to separate that from the seeds so that it helps the seeds stay dry, and it also can help to get out any bugs or bug eggs that might contaminate your seed. So it's good to clean your seed as well as you can as soon as you can. So ideally, you want sieves that are slightly larger than the seed you're cleaning, and one that's slightly smaller than the seed you're cleaning, so you clean out the chaff of both those sizes. And you can also build or purchase your own sets of screens with various hole sizes to level up. I just did that this past year and it's really nice, but you really don't need it to get started. I'd say keep it cheap and simple to start. And then once you've got your seed mostly clean using screens, for small amounts, you could just put your seeds in a bowl and then blow over them to blow away any remaining light chaff. You can also use like a box fan, like in this photo, and Rubbermaid bins. You've got the box fan, you can change the settings. You want to put it on a pile of something so that it's just over the height of the bins you're using. Set up a few bins in a row, and then you slowly pour your seed in front of the fan, and you kind of gotta watch where your good seed is falling. The lighter chaff will blow away, and you can kind of move the bin higher or lower or closer to the fan or further away from the fan to kind of get the exact amount of wind and distance to get all your clean seeds in this first bin, and then lighter seeds and chaff in the second bin. And usually you'll have to do that a few times, but this is how most even medium scale seed companies clean their seed. You don't need to invest in fancy equipment. That said, you can DIY your own winnowing equipment. There's a really cool zigzag seed cleaner online. There's plans for it, and also an air column separator. I just got a grant to build an air column separator of my own. I'm really stoked. Great for small amounts of seed. There's also the Winnow Wizard. I don't have a photo of that, but it's a really awesome winnowing machine, and you can winnow really big seeds like beans or really tiny seeds down to like yarrow or just seeds that are like really small. So that you've got some options for leveling up. Okay, and then this is probably the most important thing for perennial seed production that kind of is more complicated than producing regular re vegetable seeds. And it's that a lot of varieties of perennial vegetables are kind of more wild, or they haven't been in cultivation as long. So the germination like inhibitors haven't been bred out of these varieties yet. Maybe eventually they will. But a lot of them require either like a period of cold stratification to simulate winter, or scarification, so you can nick the seed with like nail clippers or sandpaper, or they're just really slow and variable to germinate, like Korean celery is like that, or like cold hardy chili pepper. In this photo here is camas seed, that native plant that makes bulbs, and this is a photo from just the other day. They're starting to sprout. They've been in the fridge in paper towel for 90 days, and they really seem to require at least that long to germinate. I have tips on cold stratification on my website, so either for growing or doing germ testing. And as soon as you clean your seed, get started on the germ testing, because it can take months, and you want to know if your seed is good before you start selling it. Some seed companies, and I do this very occasionally, but you can list, you don't have to, or I guess it depends on the requirements for your area, whether you need to do germination testing legally and whether you need to display that number. I like to for as many varieties as I can, because I think it helps people know that your seeds are good and helps them know how much to sow. There's like only a 50% germination rate. Oh, they can just sow double the seeds. So check in with your area. I think some states in the US require you to send your seeds to a lab for germination testing, and some you can do it yourself. But make sure you take notes on whatever you do so you can replicate it for next year. I didn't take notes in my first year, and I was like, oh, what did I do to germinate these seeds? Because usually when I'm starting seeds, I'll just like start them in pots outside of my greenhouse early spring, and they usually get a bit of cold stratification, but I try to do a more scientific approach with my seed starting now, or my germination testing now. And then a few notes on seed storage and packing. So once you've got all this nice, clean seed, you want to store it in a dry place. The dryness is most important, and cool and dark will extend the life as well. You can freeze seeds for long term, but the seed has to be extra dry. And I usually just save my seeds in little Ziploc bags or sometimes glass jars, and I'll put them all in Rubbermaid bins with a few packets of silica gel. And my house is really dry in the winter, I think because of the wood stove. So it seems to keep seeds viable for quite a long time. And I usually store the Rubbermaids in the basement over the summer just to keep them a little bit cooler. And yeah, you'll just kind of need to play around with what materials you have and what microclimates you have in your house. And for packaging, I'm sure the rules will be different for Canada and the US, but in Canada, there's not a lot of rules for small scale seed growers. But you're supposed to display your address or your mailing address on the packets. I'm not familiar with rules for other areas, but I also haven't heard of anyone actually getting in trouble for not following these rules, but it's probably good to know. And just a few notes about customer service and sales. So I found that it can be really helpful to provide lots of info online. On your website or your seed packets about all these varieties, because they're often unusual things that people haven't heard of. So you kind of have to do a little bit of a sales pitch to sell more. And then also don't underestimate how much time customer service emails take if you're selling online, or like setting up for in-person sales, like how long is your travel time and your setup and all that kind of stuff, because those can be hidden time sucks, and you want to make sure you're not spending crazy, crazy hours on this, and because you'll just get burnt out. So try to be mindful of those things. And if you're interested in selling online, Etsy is a very easy place to get started, but the fees can be high, and the customer support for sellers can kind of be hit or miss. Yeah, I started on Etsy. It was awesome. I have my own website now, which is what I recommend, but it can be expensive to set up or time consuming. This is my cat Mullen, who's currently on my lap right now, with some potato onion bulbs. Grateful for my little lap warmer. Okay, so a few resources on perennial vegetables in particular. So one of my heroes is Mandy Barber in the UK. She runs a nursery called Incredible Vegetables. She sells seeds as well as nursery stock. If you're in the UK, definitely buy from her. But otherwise, her website is a wealth of info, and her social media is too. And she has some awesome videos on YouTube. Like presentations and stuff. Similarly, Backyard Larder in the UK by Alison Tisdale. She has a super cool blog called Backyard Larder, and it's all about perennial vegetables, and she's got a lot of like food inspiration. She's very cool as well. And then for books, that book that Jesse mentioned, Perennial Vegetables by Eric Toewensmeyer, is awesome. He has a couple other books that I highly recommend as well. His website is also super, super cool, perennialsolutions.com. Highly recommend. Another book that just blew my mind with all of the ornamental plants that are actually edible, just like hosta and like spiderwort and stuff, is Around the World in 80 Plants by Stephen Barstow. He's in Norway, I believe, but incredible book and really great website as well. Edimentals.com stands for Edible Ornamentals. And I'm sure you all know about the Edible Acres YouTube channel. They are awesome. It's like the only YouTube channel I watch regularly, and I get a lot of inspiration out of that. And then a few resources specific to seed saving. None of these are necessarily tailored to perennial vegetables, but a lot of good info in there anyway. This is a great one to get started, How to Save Your Own Seeds by Seeds of Diversity Canada. It's kind of a smaller book. It's only 20 bucks online Canadian, so probably like 15 US. And you can order it online at seeds.ca. Another amazing book is Seed to Seed by Suzanne Ashworth. Excellent reference book. The Organic Seed Alliance has a ton of info on their website, ton of like PDF booklets and reference materials, and they do have courses every once in a while, which I took one and it was really awesome. And then Seed Savers Exchange has a bunch of info on their website as well. So that's it. Check out my website if you want to see how I do things, cicadaseeds.ca. I'm on Facebook and Instagram, and my email's here. I'd love to stay in touch. Thanks so much.
Yay, thank you so much. Coming back here, you can stop. Oh yeah, leave that up. That's a good idea. Well, that was awesome. That's a perfect sort of primer on how to get started. And what's so nice about it seems to me is like it's fairly easy to get started. You don't need a lot of technical equipment. You don't need a lot of space really either. You can sort of DIY yourself into a pretty profitable business. I wonder, would you be able to talk a little bit about profitability in your experience, or like what to expect? I don't know if you think of it as like hourly wages or how you calculate it in your head. Like, if somebody's just getting started this year, would they just think not being profitable for a year or two? Or like, could you give us a time horizon for that sort of piece of the puzzle?
Yeah, sure. For me, I definitely started out really small and I had like limited varieties to start. I think maybe like 20 or 25. But I did make like a few thousand dollars in my first year with online sales, which I was pretty excited about. I had no idea what to expect. And then it's grown really well from there. And I tell people, like track your hours, but I'm really bad at that. I definitely struggle. I think I probably have ADHD and I struggle with like, oh, I'm gonna do this nursery-related task and then I'll answer personal emails or whatever.
Yeah.
So I have a really hard time tracking my time. But I don't think I'm working. It's definitely like not full-time hours. Like I was holding down a full-time job while doing a lot of this seed business stuff for most of the time. But I would say definitely like kind of try to track your hours and pay like try to pay yourself a decent wage. You might not be able to do that in the first couple of years, but you should be able to pretty soon. Because yeah, otherwise, as I said, you might burn out and you want to make sure you're not making like $2 an hour because that's no
Yes.
fun.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Well, even as much as we all love being in nature, everybody's going to burn out if they're doing that. So, and then in terms of the website, you moved from Etsy to, not that this is like a promotional thing, but like what websites have you found are really good for like just processing payments and easy to demonstrate your seeds and that sort of thing?
I went with Shopify.
Okay.
I think there's pros and cons to every platform. I'm not familiar with a bunch of the other ones. Like I think I had a Weebly site a few years ago, but not for e-commerce, just for info. So I'm probably not the best person to answer that, but I have found Shopify to be really easy to like it lays out all your orders. It's pretty customizable. So yeah, I like it.
Okay. Yep, that's good for people who maybe want to start in that realm. So you went from 30-inch beds, which is the classic. That's what my vegetable beds are. Is there an optimum that you think you're going to go to, or is it going to be kind of dependent on the plants and the groupings of plants?
Great question. I think I'll probably go to 4 feet. And just because it's not a market garden, like I don't need to be reaching into the middle of the beds all the time. It's maybe like weeding once or twice. Like I use a lot of mulch, so I don't weed very much. And then just harvesting things at the end of the season. So I think wide beds is great. I might even go a little bit wider for stuff like the kale, just because it gets so big. So TBD, but definitely a few feet at least.
Yeah, yep, that makes sense to me. Yeah, and then it can be dependent on the plant if you have like the kales just go crazy or whatnot. So what's coming, what's exciting for you? Like, if you're forecasting your farm in the next 5 years or something, are there like new plants that you're excited about, or new market possibilities, or anything that's sort of bubbling up as like a future development?
Good questions. I'm always buying seeds and I'm always excited about new things. So there's like, I don't know, there's too many to list. I'm like, yeah, I'm really excited about native food plants though. I think it just makes so much sense because they're meant to grow here. They like require so little input. So that's one area I'm hoping to expand in, and then more cold hardy perennials, because a lot of Canada is like zone 2 or zone 3, and there are perennials out there. So I'm going to try to grow more of those. And yeah, cold zones in the US too and elsewhere in the world.
Cool. Yeah, I like that. I've not thought about the really cold zones really. So that's cool.
Totally. It's definitely limited what can be grown there, but there are a bunch of things.
Interesting.
And then I want to start going into some retail sales at like garden centers and stuff. Not this year, but hopefully next year. And then also hiring someone part-time. I'm starting to develop tendonitis in my thumb this year from packaging too many seeds.
Yeah.
So yeah, having some help would be great. And I did just get a awesome grant from the BC Ministry of Agriculture. So I'm building, well, my partner is building primarily a big seed processing building in our front yard.
Oh.
So I'll have time room to spread out, and I won't need to take over the kitchen table all spring. So
Yeah.
everybody's happy.
Yeah, a little more domestic bliss once you have that building in tow. That's cool. That's exciting. I'm happy for you for that. And just to be clear, I assume, but we can buy in the United States from you, right? You ship to the US.
Yes, you can. I'm kind of keeping an eye on the tariffs and if anything changes. Sometimes it's funny. I've like gone back and forth on offering US shipping and how to ship them. Right now, I'm requiring folks to sign up for an import permit, small lot seed import permit, which is free for people to apply for. It is a bit of paperwork, but that's the best way I found to get seeds into the US.
Interesting. Okay. Okay.
Shipping is a whole other can of worms. Like US is the trickiest country to get seeds into, I found. But there are nuances with other countries too. And I don't know. I'm still learning. I want to get better at understanding how all that works, but
Yeah, it's got to be the least fun thing to think about and put your mental energy toward, I would imagine. So,
absolutely. Yeah, it can be so frustrating and expensive to figure out through trial
yeah.
and error, and it's hard to find reading through all the jargon and finding actual info online can be tricky. So
Totally.
work in
Yeah.
progress.
Work in progress. Yeah. And who knows how political things will change things. So we'll see. Last question I have for you, and then I'll let you go, is what's your busiest season in terms of shipping? And like, do you have like a typical time where you're like sold out of most things? And what I'm getting at here is like, when should people really make sure to like buy from you to make sure, you have what is available?
Oh yeah, great question. Yeah, the rhythm of the year is something I'm trying to nail down, mostly so I can go on a vacation at some point in the
Yeah,
winter.
wouldn't that be nice?
So the busiest months for sales and shipping, and I also do a bunch of CD Saturdays in the spring, which are February, March. So I'm driving all over the island, at like pop-up markets and stuff. But I launch my catalog December 1st every year, and that gives me time to clean all the varieties and germ test as many as I can. So the orders start coming in then. December, January, February, March are the big months.
Okay.
April is still pretty big. And then I sell some potted plants in person and stuff, April, May. But yeah, that's the busiest time for sure.
Okay. So now's the time for people to be, if they're looking for a particular seed and to make sure that you have it in stock, to sort of make sure to check soon and get those orders in. Well, thank you
Totally.
so much, Michelina. This was really great. It's a great primer. This is a great help for, especially like we're always trying to think about people who are just getting into permaculture, maybe just took their permaculture design course and they get like really turned on by the plants or the perennials or something like, and they want to make it into their livelihood. This would be a fantastic presentation to sort of point people to get started with a lot of practical wisdom. So thank you for your time and your presentation. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. It was very fun.
Yeah, hope to stay in touch as we keep growing and changing over the years and reach out anytime. And thanks everybody for watching. We'll see you in the next one. Okay, so we'll cut it there, obviously. But thank you. That was fantastic. And just to be clear, you can't come to the round table, right? Because you had some all day thing, I think. Okay, yeah, I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah, I wish I could. It would be fun.
Yeah, it would be fun. We'll miss you, but I get it. You know, you have other things. And it's a seed thing too, right? Isn't it?
Yeah, Seedy Saturday in Victoria. It's like the biggest one of the year. So
So it's like you're going to make a bunch of sales, or are you running it, or
I'm
both?
not running it. I'm just vending at it.
Oh,
So
okay.
yeah.
Okay. Well, I wish you a bunch of sales and a bunch of money.
Thank you. I hope so
Yeah.
too.
And if you need anything or want to, you know, be featured on anything or promote anything that you have coming up, consider, you know, Pina like a good resource. We have a social media guy who's happy to like share stuff. If you have discounts or these types of things, we're super
That
happy to
is
do that because we can't pay our presenters, but at
yeah.
the very least, we can be good friends with them and like help social media and all that business. So
That
reach
is
out
so
anytime.
awesome. Yeah, I saw that in the space and I was like, okay, I should set up a discount code. I'm just gonna write that down.
Oh, yeah. That'd be
Because
cool.
yeah,
Yeah,
it'd
because
be in
Shopify, that's pretty easy, right? I think.
it's super easy.
Okay,
Yeah.
cool. Yeah, awesome. Well, I
Thank
hope you
you.
get a bunch of sales from this, and then we'll follow up when it's all packaged and you can like send it out to people. It should be available to send out to folks like for an affiliate sort of split fee thing. Pretty much once we have it packaged, which I think will be about March 1st, and then really ongoingly for years and years to come, hopefully. So I'll follow up with that.
Okay, that's great. I did have a question too. Folks are asking me if they'll get a recording if they sign up, or if, is the only way to see the recording to buy the package after?
So the only way to see the recording is to be in this summit space right here, and then it'll be available until I edit everything. So like 2 weeks probably that people
Okay.
can come and check it out, and then we'll just like make it like more private, more like pay for it.
Okay,
And
perfect.
then, you know, this is your presentation. So if you want to have a copy of this and share it freely to whoever, you are more than welcome to do that. Just let me know.
Okay. Yeah, I might do that and just like not post it publicly, but just send it out to folks who ask. That'd be amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. We just want it to make sense for everybody involved, you know. It'd be cool if it makes Pina a little bit of money. It'd be cool if it makes our presenters a little bit of money. But more than anything, we're just trying to like do continuing education and like keep people like informed about like cool new people like yourself. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's really nice. I will definitely try to push people towards the whole package for sure. I get it. You guys need to get paid too. It's
Yeah, you
awesome
know,
work.
we're a nonprofit. You know, we're struggling like everybody, but also like Pina has staff money to pay me and several other people, so like we're kind of in a good position. So just keep growing the movement and sharing the knowledge and all that. It's fun.
Yeah.
Well, thanks again so much. I really appreciate it and hope to talk to you soon.
Yeah, thank you. I hope it goes well on Saturday.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.